Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, brought to you today by Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services. Markham Search professional recruiters recognize the importance of working closely with companies and prospective candidates to ensure the perfect match. So thank you so much to our sponsors today, and thank you so much to Lori J. Cameron for joining us. Lori's publicist sent me something saying, how often do you feel overwhelmed, stressed out, and distracted and unable to focus? I know that's what got me when I saw this press release, because we all have those experiences. Our guest today is mindful leadership expert Lori J. Cameron. Her new book, The Mindful Day, Practical Ways to Find Focus, Calm, and Joy from Morning to Evening, has been called the ultimate how-to guide to practicing mindfulness. Lori is founder and CEO of Purpose Blue, a leadership coaching and organizational development firm. And for more information, you can find information on Lori and her book at LoriJCameron.com. So Lori, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great to be here, Jennifer.
I love this topic. As I mentioned, I get all these press releases, and there are certain subjects that I just tend to gravitate towards. And when I got this one from your publicist about mindfulness and how we can overcome stress, it really struck a chord with me, because I know as an entrepreneur, as a businesswoman, I definitely find myself up against the wall of being stressed and not being fully balanced all the time. So how did this become a topic that interested you?
Well, I've had a busy career, as many of us have, working in the client services industry for Accenture, and then as an executive in three other companies. And, you know, the world has become so complex and uncertain, and it's changing so rapidly that stress is something that most of us experience every day. So I became very interested, because I've always been a student of performance and what makes some people flourish and other people kind of shrink and not really do as well. So I was really interested in how we can better navigate stress.
I love that. And so how long have you been studying the subject of stress and mindfulness?
Well, it really started with me being stressed. I was in a large-scale technology implementation. I was living in California, and I was working. My client was a large energy company, and my client counterpart, this lovely engineer, actually asked me one day. She said, "Have you heard about mindfulness?" And I said, "No, I haven't." And she said, "Well, you know, it's really a mindset and skills that can help us shift how we relate to our present experience, to each moment." And I said, "Okay, tell me more about that." And she actually taught me the basic practice, or the basic exercise, if you will, to develop the capacity to be present. And that was, she taught me how to focus my attention and to use my breath in a practice called mindful breathing. So that was 22 years ago. And I haven't stopped since.
That's extraordinary. So tell some of our listeners who might be interested in what this means. What does mindful breath mean? And how could we out here in the world, who are constantly bombarded by stress and anxiety, how can we incorporate that into our own daily practice?
So mindful breathing. We all know breathing, because that's an innate part of our everyday experience, every moment, but we don't often pay attention to our breath. And that's where the definition of mindfulness comes in. Mindfulness is about paying attention on purpose in the present moment. And we do that in a way where we suspend judgment and look at whatever we're paying attention to with openness, curiosity, and compassion. So mindfulness is about tuning in or paying attention to our direct experience. And the way we train that is by picking an object of attention, like the breath, and then just bringing our attention to the breath coming in and the breath going out. And then inevitably, our mind's going to wander. We're going to get distracted. We're going to remember something we forgot to do, or someone will come in the room, and then we begin again. So that practice, mindful breathing, is the core foundational way to train yourself to become more mindful.
I love that. That's a great philosophy. I know that for me, I've been practicing meditation now, I think, for 5 years. And meditation, would you say meditation, is that a form of mindfulness, or are they different aspects of stress relief?
Yeah, that's a great question. Meditation is the broader word. And that just means a set of exercises that can bring us into a certain state right in the moment, and also can help us build mental muscles, if you will, skills that help us be more mindful in the moment. So mindfulness is an outcome. So when I'm mindful, I'm able to be clear and present and not listening to the voice in my head, not on autopilot, not planning for the future, ruminating about the past. I'm very present. But meditation is just a broad set of skills that help me train in all the different capacities that enable me to have that outcome.
Wow. Thank you for distinguishing
that. It's great you're doing
that. Yeah. I think I had the two collapsed. I think for myself and other people I know, sometimes we think of these things and we just kind of collapse these ideas, not understanding that there's different techniques that you could use to meditate, one of which might be a mindful practice, right?
You know, yes, and most people do collapse them. And I think one of the most exciting discoveries of our time is that we can deliberately choose different practices to train different parts of our mind. And this is called neuroplasticity. Whatever we repeatedly do changes the structure and function of our brain. And this makes, you know, this is why meditation and mindfulness meditation in particular is really a superpower, because it helps us navigate this stressful world we're in by developing the skills that help us see things more clearly.
I love that. That's so brilliant. And tell me, like, how was it that you got on National Geographic's radar? How is it that National Geographic wound up publishing your book? That's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you. I'm just so grateful for this opportunity. And they were looking for someone who has a deep long-term mindfulness practice. And I've been training with Thich Nhat Hanh, Tara Brach, and Jack Kornfield for 2 decades. So they were looking for that, but they were also looking for someone with a deep business background and that is living in the everyday world, you know, not in a monastery or, you know, a full-time academic, but someone who's in the business setting and in meetings every day and making school lunches in the morning and juggling all the different roles that we have in modern life. So I fit the bill. So I got really lucky with this opportunity to write this ultimate guidebook for mindfulness.
That is amazing. And so do you talk, I want to go back for a moment to neuroplasticity. I think I love the science of the brain. If I had all the time in the world, I would go devote 10 years or so to PhD in neuroscience. So tell me a little bit more about this neuroplasticity and how we might be able to use that to our advantage to perhaps create habits that are going to help retrain our brain in a good way, if I'm understanding you correctly.
You said it beautifully. We now know that we can intentionally choose different practices that changes the gray matter, that changes the thickness and the structure of different parts of the brain that are associated with emotional intelligence skills, for example. So I'll give you an example. One of the foundational competencies in high performance and well-being is self-awareness. That's how well we can see ourselves. We see our thoughts, our emotions, the stories we're telling ourselves. So how well I can see myself in the moment is a very powerful competency. And if I practice with mindful breathing, bringing my attention to the breath, bringing it back when I get distracted, as well as practicing with a body scan, which is a very particular meditation where you bring attention to each part of the body one by one, you know, starting with the head, going to the feet. I'm actually training interoception. I'm training my ability to see what's going on the inside, and that's associated with the insula. So the insula is a part of the brain that actually gets stronger, and my ability to notice emotions very early on and know my state real time. If I'm in a difficult meeting at work or in a job interview and I notice I'm getting really nervous, the earlier I can detect that, the more space I have to respond skillfully. So that's an example of neuroplasticity. If I do a body scan for 10 minutes every day, I'm going to get better and better and stronger at being able to do that. And here's the super cool thing, that not only these practices not only shift my state in the moment for me to see clearly, you know, right now in real time, but they actually build up these traits and capacities over time. So it's like taking your mind to the gym. It's really great.
I want to play with this for a minute because I've done little body scans. It's not a practice that I've regularly done, but I've recently played with the concept of it. When we're talking about a body scan, you're mindfully breathing, you're taking on some sort of meditative technique, and then you're internally scanning through your body for what? To see if there are emotions stored? Are you looking for physical ailments? Can you elaborate a little bit more on what this body scan would look like and how it could be utilized in day-to-day work?
Yeah, that's a terrific question. So the body scan is bringing attention to parts of the body in a systematic way that makes it a practice. It's a formal 5-minute, 10-minute, 20-minute practice. You get to pick the time. But what I'm looking for are any physiological sensations. I'm looking for tightness, feeling of butterflies, temperature, hotness, coolness, you know, sometimes people report, you know, electricity or tingly feelings. So I'm systematically aiming the flashlight of my attention or the beam of attention from the inside out on my body. And that looking for sensations actually is the doorway to understanding emotions, because emotions are physiological sensations that rise in the body. They're first physiological sensations, and then they hit our cognitive processing centers and we label them. So you might feel, if you think of being sad, like maybe the last time you were sad, if you pull that up in your mind right now and you kind of close your eyes and imagine that feeling, you'll associate something, you'll feel something in the body. So the body clues us in to emotions. And when I practice the body scan, bringing attention into the body, it helps me identify emotions and become more emotionally aware.
That I'm taking notes as you're speaking. I'm already making a mental note to go back and re-listen to the show just so I can catch the little bits that I didn't get a chance to capture as you were speaking, because I think it's such a wonderful tool that we could use in our tool belt.
Yeah.
When we become aware, I know for me personally, I get massages once a week, and sometimes it's the strangest thing. I'll be getting a massage or acupuncture, and I will start crying like a little baby on the table, which is something embarrassing to admit. But all of a sudden, they're releasing something that I didn't know I had stored or I'd pent up somewhere in my body. And it's cathartic when you release it and you're able to not have it be in your body like tension. And it's freeing and liberating. So I could see with a practice like this, you're not just going to be in a reactive circumstance where you wind up crying or being upset or angry in an unexpected or inopportune time. You're being accountable for your own well-being and checking in with yourself regularly, right?
Yes, I love that you linked that to that experience when we get a massage. And what we're doing is often throughout the day, we all experience emotions, particularly difficult emotions. And many of us have developed strategies over the years to suppress or avoid or push down emotions. So when you're on that massage table and you're getting a massage and you're being cared for and you've created space in your day, right, to just be with whatever's there, which is another intention we have with mindfulness, you're allowing that emotion to be released. And when we're practicing the body scan, which I describe as a formal practice of taking 10 minutes or 15 minutes, we're actually doing the same thing. I'm scanning the body. I'm noticing what I'm feeling. I'm noticing if I do feel a certain heaviness in the chest or uneasiness in the belly. And then I can deepen my inquiry. I can say, huh, what's going on there? Is there an emotion present with that heavy feeling? And even that question, that gentle inquiry to myself, is it's beautiful self-care because it allows that emotion to come up. I can look at it. I can meet it tenderly, as my teacher Thich Nhat Hanh has taught me to meet my emotions and hold them with loving awareness, just like a mother holds a baby. You know, we just tend to it. We don't stuff it down or binge Netflix or dive into a bottle of Chardonnay. We actually can meet our emotions.
Yeah, I think that's great, because when you're in these positions where you have an opportunity to actually look at yourself, it's funny because this is very apropos for a talk I'm doing on Thursday, as we were discussing in DC. One of the techniques I was suggesting for when you're dealing with passive aggressive people, and I would love your insight on this, is to look and see, because we all, what Signe Whitson had said on the show back in August of last year, is that there are people who have passive aggressiveness as a state of being, where it's their default mechanism, their operating philosophy, whether they choose it or not, it's kind of their default. And then you have those of us who might have moments of passive aggressiveness because we're feeling hurt or not acknowledged. And one suggestion I had for people is just to kind of place your hand on your heart and to allow a couple breaths and to notice if there's something that you need to be acknowledged for by someone or by yourself, and to give yourself that opportunity to express it. Because when we, like you said, dive into that bottle of Chardonnay or, you know, do whatever, smoke cigarettes, the different things we might do that might not be healthy, go shopping online at midnight, that we're just trying to numb these feelings, that we actually have an opportunity, if we turn within, to connect to it. And even if you can't be acknowledged by the other person who you might have an upset or want to be acknowledged by, one of the things my friend taught me is you put your hand on your heart and you internally acknowledge yourself and you visualize acknowledging yourself. And I found it to be a healthy mechanism to release those emotions myself. Any thoughts on that sort of modality?
Yeah, there's a number of wonderful things that you brought up to speak to. One is the healing power of touch. So when you put your hand on your chest, you release oxytocin, and actually it stimulates the same outcome as when we're hugged or we have a sense of belonging, connection, or affiliation. So that's a very powerful move, just physically. And I often teach that and use that with a lot of the executives I coach. And then the second thing is, whenever we allow emotions, when we recognize them and allow them and investigate them and then nurture ourselves, then we're able to shift into a more skillful state. And what you just described is a very skillful move to pause, acknowledge, and recognize emotions and allow them to rise and shift. So that's a practice called RAIN: recognize, allow, investigate, and nurture. And it's a really useful thing to do. The other thing that I add to that is the practice of self-compassion. That it's heavily researched and science-backed by Dr. Kristen Neff and Dr. Christopher Germer. And this is where we stop and use that move where you put your hand on your chest. You recognize that this is a difficult moment, you know, that there's something here that needs to be acknowledged. And then the second step is common humanity. You realize that many people, not just you, many people are in that situation, whatever it might be. It might be acknowledgement. It might be a failure or a setback. It could be any, whatever you're dealing with in the moment. And then the third step is talking to yourself with kindness. So offering kindness to yourself, saying, this is hard. This is really tough. That person, you know, just had a very passive aggressive comment to me, or, you know, this is a difficult moment. You know, what do you need right now, sweetheart? So that's a three-step process that I've taught at companies and, you know, big public mindful leadership programs around the world. And it doesn't matter what industry or what country I'm in or what the mother tongue is of that country. that practice gets so much take up. And I hear a lot of feedback about how powerful that can be.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. And it's funny, I wonder if my friend had studied with you, because that's exact verbiage that she taught me to use is when you put your hand on your heart, you just say, hey, sweetheart, what do you need? And you just love yourself unconditionally, because we can't expect anything. We can't expect love or happiness to come externally if we're 100% accountable for it for ourselves. That's true freedom.
You said it so well. That's absolutely right. And you know, you're speaking about empowerment when you go to DC. And
yeah.
This is empowerment, because what I'm doing is I'm developing strategies and skills that allow me to take care of myself in the moment, to see clearly, to shift my state and make wiser choices. It's not about the other person. It doesn't matter if the other person, is a permanent passive aggressive person or is only having a passive aggressive moment. I mean, I think those are really interesting distinctions. But we're actually learning skills that are helping ourselves shift. So we can put the oxygen mask on ourselves and take care of ourselves and then be wise.
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction. When I first joined the company that I was my own boss basically for 8 years and recently got acquired by the company Markham Search. And it was funny, one day my boss was saying something to me and I said, well, Rich, I'm not expecting you to make me happy. I'm the one responsible for making myself happy. And he was kind of taken aback. He's like, what? What do you mean? I'm like, my day has nothing to do with you. My day has everything to do with me and my choices and my responses to people and situations. And it's funny because not to put it in a negative way, but it's our ego. Our ego likes to think, oh, but we have a terrible impact on other people, or we have a great impact. It's kind of like Don Miguel Ruiz's book of not taking anything personally. You can either have somebody say, Lori, you're the most amazing author and speaker in the world, or Lori, you're a complete jerk. And either way, just not take either one of those statements personally, because it has nothing to do with you.
Yes, you are so right. And I think that's really hard to do. So you're completely right. And it's really hard. So when we notice, we get hooked, right? Or we get that little pang. If I haven't yet, knock on wood, I'm going to knock on a lot of wood today, but I haven't read a bad review yet for my book,
yeah,
but I was already preparing myself, when and if I do, I'm not going to take it personally, right? I'm just going to breathe and notice any grab in my body, notice any, emotional tightness or whatever might be there, and just breathe, put my hand on my chest and say, that's okay, sweetheart, so we can release that. But not taking things personally is something we all, need to do, and it can be really difficult.
Yeah, I think it's just something, it's funny with the word need, because I'm adverse. I just got a check in from my business coach,
and
he was talking about language and how the minute we say like need or try or should, especially those words, it's like I actually feel something in my body when I say those words. It feels like kind of like almost like somebody punches you, because you feel this necessary action, like you have to do something, and it almost puts you in an adversarial relationship with yourself. I don't even know where this is coming from. It's just kind of coming out of nowhere. But that's what
I've heard. It's wisdom. It's so great, Jennifer. As soon as I said the word need just now, I felt myself hesitating and tripping before the word came out, and then it came out, and I had the same little pinch or something in my body. I thought need, because I also completely agree that we really want to let go of the word need. And we want to start bringing mindful attention to the language we use. So the word should that you just brought up is another great one. If we hear ourselves saying should about ourselves or about someone else, that's a flag. So we just, take a breath and ask ourselves, what am I believing? Let go of shoulds, let go of coulds, let go of woulds and need, all those words. So you have a great coach.
I have many great coaches and I love it. I'm so grateful to have people like you on the show and all of my coaches and teachers. And in fact, Thich Nhat Hanh, one of your mentors, has been one of my favorite authors of all time. I love all of his books related to mindfulness and awareness. And it's extraordinary that you've had the opportunity to study with him all these years.
Yes, I feel really grateful. And I'm so grateful for being introduced to him 22 years ago and for having my family experiences teaching. And What I did with the book is I wove these stories and experiences of being with him through the moments of our day. So as he sat with us and taught us how to drink tea with two hands and bringing our full attention to the teacup and the tea and thinking about interconnection and how we can see the cloud and the rain and the water in our tea and really smell that and sip it and be present. That's just one example. How we come in the door and meet each other with presence and hug each other in a short hugging meditation, and how we, you know, repair things when we get upset or there's conflict. We use the beginning a new practice to acknowledge people and then bring attention to what we appreciate about them and create space for healing. So he has been a really powerful teacher, and he continues to be. And I'm just so honored to take those teachings, those ancient wisdom teachings, combine them with neuroscience, and then put them into modern language and situations that we face every day.
Yeah, I love his teachings. I love that you honor his teachings and get to study with him. And in fact, one of my teachers, Michael Beckwith of Agape, I'll never forget, I was at a meditation retreat with him, and he was referencing a story of a meditation retreat that he did with Thich Nhat Hanh. And he said he was up, he likes to run, Michael Beckwith does, early in the morning. And so one day when he's at this meditation retreat, he's running and he kind of runs past Thich Nhat Hanh, and he thinks to himself, like, oh gosh, he thinks, oh, I wonder if he ever runs. So later on, they're sitting and they're about to begin, and it was a silent meditation retreat. And Thich Nhat Hanh said, he looks out to the audience and he says, you know, there was a man jogging earlier today, and he thought to himself, I wonder if Thich Nhat Hanh runs, if it's something he does. And he said, I want you to know I do run, but when I do, every foot that I put on the ground, I am grateful and loving towards every piece of earth that I touch. And I thought it was just such a beautiful story of mindfulness. Like, you can't picture him if you do know him and his teachings. It's hard to visualize him running because he's such a still, beautiful soul. And yet here he said that, you know, he's connected to every step he takes, whether it's a run or a step, a normal walking step. I thought that was interesting.
It's so interesting. And I was teaching mindful walking at Google in Zurich, and we had 70 leaders from across Europe come together, and we went outside and we walked along the river, and I talked to them about learning mindful walking from Thich Nhat Hanh. And I said that he teaches us to kiss the earth with our feet so that each step we take, we kiss the earth and we meet the earth in gratitude, and we feel that energy and healing and comfort coming from the earth to us. And I just love the story you shared, because I can't, it is hard to visualize Thich Nhat Hanh running.
I know, right?
But I love it. Yeah, it really is. But now I've got a whole new visual, which is really fun. But, you know, it's really wonderful too that he talked about running, because so many Americans and people around the world love running. And a lot of people ask me, they say, oh, well, I can't meditate, I can't sit and do mindful breathing, but running is my meditation, or, you know, rowing is my meditation. And I say back to them, it can be, and it also can't be. You know, it depends. If you're running with your headset in and you're listening to a podcast or music, or you're planning your day, that's not a meditation. But if you're running and bringing mindful attention and loving presence to your foot touching the earth when you're running, then that is a meditation. And your story really illustrates that so well.
Yeah, my husband and I joke all the time because he's an avid golfer and trying to get me into it. And he says it's his form of meditation. And for me, the times where I hit the ball, which is not often that I actually connect, but the times that I do hit the ball, I use my meditative mantra. And if I simply allow a breath and I'm fully present and connected in the moment, and I say the mantra to myself and then I connect, it actually becomes a meditative experience for me. So I think that whether it's playing music, running, golfing, et cetera, I think so many people become intimidated by concepts like meditation or mindfulness. Mm-hmm. It seems so unreachable. The first time one of my teachers and friends told me to meditate before a massage, she was my massage therapist, but also a dear friend and a teacher of mine, and she would just tell me, this was 15 years ago, Jen, just can't you just try to meditate for like 30 seconds before the massage? It'll help you release the tension. And I would look at her and I'd sit there for like 5 seconds and be done with it. And I would have never thought 15 years ago that I would spend 30 minutes to an hour every day in meditation and practice. But it just takes those like little baby steps of getting yourself present and grounded and self-aware.
You know, I think the word you said that the phrase you used that people are intimidated and it seems unreachable. I think there's a reason for that. And the idea of meditation or mindfulness seems very conceptual or esoteric. And there's a lot of teaching and writing out there. And not, you know, some books do this, many don't. They don't actually demystify exactly and precisely how you do it. And National Geographic had the vision of putting together a very practical book that would explain, you know, exactly what I'm doing with my mind, exactly what I'm doing with my body, if I integrate mindfulness throughout the day. And I love that you use that word unreachable, because other people have explained that to me, that sometimes I forget, you know, once you've been doing something for a long time, you forget. And they do, it feels very vague. Like if someone says, meditate for 30 seconds before the massage, most people don't know how to do that. Like, what do you mean meditate? Do I sit here and put my fingers in a funny position and, you know, sit crisscross applesauce on the meditation table, on the massage table? But really, it's just about being very deliberate in where we place our attention. And then noticing that stream of consciousness. It's like we have a soundtrack or, you know, a news ticker in our minds, and a lot of us are just on autopilot or in a trance, as my teacher Tara Brock teaches. We don't notice that all these thoughts and all these narratives and all these stories are just flying by, and we're caught up inside of them. And mindfulness or meditation teaches us to step out of the stream and see them and create a shift in our perspective, which is, you know, really powerful.
Yeah, I love what you said, because you're talking about attention, and I'm going to add another word, which I think we've thrown in here a little bit, is intention. I think it's your attention multiplied by your intention that equals your ability to be present and to create what you want in life, because you can have attention and you can have intention, but for me, there's something there about the way those two flow together to create a whole.
I love that you brought that up, and I've included the work of Shauna Shapiro. In 2005, she wrote a groundbreaking paper that said mindfulness is made up of attention, intention, and attitude, these three components. So it's what we're paying attention to, the intention behind it, and the mindset or attitude. So am I paying attention and judging and comparing and evaluating, or am I paying attention with openness, curiosity, and kindness? That's the attitude piece. So those three pieces are really the components of mindfulness. And I think it's great that you brought the intention word into this conversation.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, it's funny, Lori, and I'm going to sound a little woo-woo perhaps, but you know what? I don't care. Before I do the show, and as particularly today, I meditated myself this morning, and I noticed that there was something I wanted to create. I said, you know what? What would it look like for me? I was doing a meditation on manifestation and just generating whatever you want. And they said, see it in your mind. And so for me, I was like, God, that would be extraordinary if I had 100,000 listeners a month, like more people that I could touch their lives. And I think we're at 30 or 40,000 right now. And I appreciate every person who tunes in. And the funny thing that came up is in the middle of this meditation, they say, listen for something your higher self is about to tell you about what you need to get there. And what came up for me is being present. So because, you know, in addition to the radio show, I do other things, I have speaking, et cetera. There are times where I catch myself and I'm not 100% present with every guest the whole show. And so today I made a practice of mindfulness before the show that no matter how busy my calendar was, I was going to take 10 minutes and just do a quick meditation and just really connect and be present. And throughout this entire show with you today, I've noticed that there's been something different, something shifted by putting that intention, the attention, and the attitude on being present.
Wow, I love that. And I have to tell you, when I was listening to you right now, like just as you explained that to me, I felt, you know, such an affirmation in my own body, just kind of this tingling feeling. And that's from tuning in, right? That's a lot of body scan practice.
Yeah.
But just a validation of my experience of you being really present and really connected. And it allowed us to have such an impactful conversation because we were both fully here.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Like, it's night and day, and I'm just so grateful for this opportunity. I could talk to you for hours and hours about your book and everything else, but I know we're in the midst of so many things. You're on your book tour right now, so please tell our listeners, are there any points that I didn't get a chance to cover with you today, or any tips that you would love people to walk away with that, you know, your intention and your intention for the show?
Well, yes. One message I really want to convey is that whatever you practice, grow stronger. So the key is, it's one thing to listen to you and I talk about it, but people need to really set an intention to practice. You know, 5 minutes a day, mindful breathing or focused attention in the morning will allow them to recognize emotions during the day, to see beauty, to deepen attention, to listen differently. So my key message for your listeners is to practice. Practice mindfulness every day. And I'd love for them to join me in my community. They can find me at purposeblue.com.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I want people to go out and pick up the book. And so where can people find the book? Is that the best place to find The Mindful Day?
They can find Mindful Day at Amazon or independent bookstores, the National Geographic website, or my own website, lauriejcameron.com is my author website. So, but you might, you know, they can just Google The Mindful Day, Lauri Cameron, and it should come up. It was just rated the number one book in meditation on Amazon.
Oh,
and number
gosh.
One in stress management, self-help. Yeah. I was so, so happy about that.
Congratulations. That's a huge achievement. Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Well, again, please go get Lori's book. And do you mind if I give a couple shout outs? I know that I have a lot of friends who have been approaching me lately as far as how and where do they find meditation. And I'm sure there are resources in your book, but I'd love to throw a few out there for some people who might be tuning in and saying, okay, well, you kind of piqued my interest. Where do I go? I know a few that I like is Insight Timer is a wonderful one that you can find.
My favorite.
Yeah. Oh, do you use it too? I love it. Do you have meditations on there?
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't. And it's on my to-do list. I will put them on there, but I'm so glad you're recommending that because it's a wonderful tool. You can set a time for any amount you want, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and just set a bell, or you can listen to guided meditations and it's free. It's a wonderful app.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of my favorites. So I love that one quite a bit. And then I also, Headspace is another one. It was so cute. I was one of my friends, Arlene, who recently wanted to learn to meditate. I had suggested it to her. And when we tried to do a different type of meditation, she said, Jen, I'm just hooked on that guy's voice from Headspace. But that's more of a subscription-based thing that you can do.
Right.
So that one's great. The one that somebody introduced me to lately, which was the one I referenced during this morning, you can find on YouTube. And it's called How to Manifest Anything. Very powerful tool, in parentheses, Law of Attraction, and it's by You Are Creators. But that's a fun one that I've been playing with now. And it's just an 11-minute meditation. And of course, you have all sorts of practices. I know in LA, there is a great place I go to called Unplugged Meditation, or Michael Beckwith does do complimentary meditation training on Sunday mornings, I think, at 7:30. And I'm trying to think, gosh, there are so many wonderful ways. Oh, the other one I do is Transcendental. Have you ever done Transcendental Meditation?
I haven't, but I know a number of people that use that, 20 minutes twice a day using a mantra.
Yeah. So I do it once a day. So I do it in the morning for a longer period of time. But I kind of mix it all up. The reason I wanted to give people a variety of resources is one thing might, you know, connect to you a little bit more than another thing. So some people prefer a mantra, some people prefer guided. Are there any other websites or tools you would recommend that you really like for meditation or mindfulness?
Yes, I want to underline what you just said, that we really need to experiment and go into this with openness and curiosity and find the tools and meditations that work best for you. I really like Tara Brach, com.
Okay.
So she's a wonderful teacher, and she's got audio and video that you, she does wonderful teachings every Wednesday night, and she puts them on her website so you can experience those. Those are terrific. And I really endorse the Insight Timer and Headspace. I think they're both great.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lori. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. If anybody missed any portion of today's show, it will be available for download immediately following the show on the LA Talk Radio website under my Get Yourself the Job page in the archive section at the bottom. And you can get the full episode there, or later in the week, you can tune in on iTunes to Get Yourself the Job and subscribe and listen at your leisure. We always appreciate any feedback or comments you may have. And next week, we invite you to tune in at 4 p.m. I have Shannon Leishner joining me. It'll actually be her third time on the show. She is one of my favorite human beings on the planet. She is a wonderful spiritual teacher, and we will be elaborating on the conversation of how to deal with toxic people in the workplace. So thank you again for joining us today, Lori. It's been a true pleasure.
Oh, thanks.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.